Get 15% off a set of BrakeBest Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Hey, Power Athlete Nation, welcome to our three-part series, and I'm getting into part two with Dr. Kirk Parsley on hormone replacement and really hormone optimization, TRT, HRT. There's a ton of acronyms following it, but there are very few people in the world that understand this as well as Doc Parsley, and I'm extremely lucky to count him as a friend and have him evaluate my own blood work. So I have a special access to somebody who's one of the smarter people in the world in terms of hormone optimization. So we get into not only where you should start, if this is a question for you, get into the testing and really just kind of understanding some of the nuances of hormone replacement and understanding as a man who's, you know, going out in the world, who's, you know, 30, 40 years old, what this looks like and what you should be looking for and the questions that you should be asking. So buckle up for part two of our three-part series with Dr. Kirk Parsley. Another part of our interview with Dr. Parsley, trying to hit some of the top fitness and health and just really some of the questions that we field within our Discord that are kind of hitting us. The one that I do hit quite often on the Discord is people, and mostly guys over the age of 30, 35, 40, 50 years old, asking about hormone replacement and, more importantly, TRT.
Right.
It's everywhere, all over social media. I mean, there's people that have dedicated their entire gym and practice in this to, you know, managing this element in life. And I feel like nobody knows more about this than you.
I appreciate that.
So,
for men.
For men. Well, like we talked about, if you look at my demographic, it's majority men, just because I appeal to that. Not to say I don't have daughters and a wife, but it's just... It's
we get Brandy in here if you want to talk about female hormones.
And there's a lot of guys that like to talk about it, and I just don't feel like I'm qualified to enter the female psyche with this thing. But there are a lot of guys that are, so I'm not mad at them at anything. But for that, like, where does somebody start? I mean, it always kind of starts with, I'm not feeling like I used to. There's this idea that maybe performance is decreasing, I'm not as virile as I once was, and something has to be wrong. So where do they start?
I mean, the place to start is just to measure it, right?
Testing.
Just do some serum labs, and I would, of course, I take a very robust kind of multidimensional approach on this. So, there's testosterone production, there's testosterone maintenance, and then there's free versus free and bioavailable versus bound and total. So you need somebody who knows how to interpret those labs, and need somebody who knows sort of the pros and cons of the treatment. So you're going to need somebody with specialized knowledge. And I know that that's a slippery topic there, because there are really smart guys out there who aren't healthcare providers, who can't help you once, like, they can tell you what you need, but they can't prescribe it for you, or like they can't help you get it. And then there's a lot of doctors out there that are doing TRT that don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Sure.
I don't even, I kind of cringe at TRT now just because of that phrase. Like, I'm not, or HRT, I'm sorry.
HRT, TRT. that deals with hormone replacement.
I'm just like, it's not hormone replacement therapy, it's hormone optimization, right?
Because
it may not be, I may not be giving you hormones. I might be giving you enclomiphen and, Arimidex, and, I might be just increasing your own production and decreasing your aromatization and enzymatic conversion to DHT, and increasing your free by decreasing your sexual hormone binding globulin and getting your free up until that upper quintile of the bell curve. And that's really kind of where you need to be. So the symptomatology, I'm not a fanboy of Huberman, but he, on one of his podcasts, he said something I thought was a really good a really good sort of layman's explanation of testosterone. He said, you know, testosterone makes hard things feel easier. I think that's pretty legit, right?
Yeah.
You, because there's a lot of cognitive things that people don't think about. There's a lot of cognitive enhancement from testosterone. And I go over the, you know, I go over that, you know, there's things that's called mental vigor and verbal fluency and, like, you know, all these kind of terms that just, you know, kind of gives you that masculine engineering analytical kind of brain that makes you want to figure out and solve problems and gives you enthusiasm and confidence towards moving that way. And then, of course, you know, there's body composition shifts, increasing fat and decreasing muscle, and there's getting weaker and everything hurting more, and, you know, poor sleep. You know, there's almost a perfect correlation between total testosterone and total time in bed. The less you sleep, the less testosterone you have. The less testosterone you have, the less you'll sleep. You know, that's just the way it is. There's no trick with that. You know, you can't take supplements. You can't even take my sleep supplement.
And for those of you guys that, and I'll give a shameless plug.
Let's plug this.
Yes. I am a proponent and daily or nightly user of Dr. Parsley's sleep remedy.
Yeah.
And not one, but two.
Yeah.
And when I tell people I take two, they always are like, why do you take two? And I'm like, I just do.
Because I can.
but when I go on vacation, I take one because
yeah.
I don't always bring enough.
Yeah.
And I don't really notice a difference in my sleep. But, like, the only time I've ever had any sleep problems was after Jamie got attacked by the dog.
Right.
I didn't really sleep very well. And I know we talked about that.
Yeah.
And that just took me to, like, when I wake up, just like some meditation and some relaxing. So what I would do is I'd take one and then I'd, like, cook up another one. And when I'd wake up, I'd take a second one and fall right back to sleep.
Yeah.
And then that subsided.
Yeah.
But I've never had a problem sleeping.
Right.
So
yeah,
I've been really lucky in that way.
Me either. But like you, I just take it cause I feel like I sleep better. I feel better when I do it. So I do it.
Yeah. And there's magnesium in there.
Yeah.
Which, there's some really cool research we just posted where, you know, taking magnesium, especially like, saturating the body in magnesium increases, white or, gray matter and the matter of the brain.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great anti-dementia tool. Yeah. You know, Stanford documented that with their, what do they call their magnesium L-tryptophan or their magnesium L-tyrosine or magnesium L-tryptophan, whatever amino acid they put their magtine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They did some really good age-associated neurological decline proof with magnesium that it reversed those changes. I can't remember the number now, but it was significant. It was 20-30%, something like that.
Yeah, so I put your sleep remedy in. I do a scoop of that, and then I do creatine and glutamine. And the creatine is, you know, and I've been on the creatine train longer than anybody I know, and I've been beating the war drum on it. Chris Masterjohn just had a great piece where he called it the body's second ATP. I mean, if you want to have mitochondrial function for a long period of time, saturating the cells in the body with creatine is like a no-brainer.
I started taking 20 grams a day about a year ago.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
But any digestive issues?
There's a lot of research for the neurological improvement and the neurological enhancement coming at higher than 10 grams, like 10 to 20 grams.
Well, the other one that they're not calculating is if you eat about 2 pounds of meat a day and then you take about 10, you saturate. So they talked about people that don't eat. I mean, I was like 2 pounds of meat. I mean, that's probably for me roughly like three meals. Because I eat like, you know, 10 to 12 ounces of meat per meal. But they said 2 pounds.
I probably don't eat 2 pounds. I probably eat a pound and a half a day.
But then like 20 grams or, you know, makes sense.
Yeah.
But I've always told people take as much creatine as you can. The minute that you get diarrhea, back it off a little bit. We interrupt this episode with a shameless self-promotion. Do you want to build thick, sidewalk-splitting slabs of muscle? Let me introduce you to Jack Street. Get access to the same tried and true training methods I followed during my 10 years in the NFL, all to walk into training camp at 308 pounds at sub 8% body fat. Punch your ticket to the gain train and join thousands of residents already following Jack Street. Head to powerathletehq.com/Jack Street and claim your 7-day free trial today. Now back to the show.
Yeah, I space it out. I take 10 in the morning and 10 like later on, you know, in the evening or before bed. Yes, where were we? So yeah, get your labs done, get a full course, find somebody who actually knows how to evaluate all of the labs and knows, you know, the different mechanisms for enhancing testosterone. And then, of course, you know, something that I always preach, you know, testosterone starts at cholesterol, right? All the sex hormones start at cholesterol. There's a lot of steps between cholesterol and testosterone. And you want to you want to make sure that you have those intermediates, because those intermediates are biologically active. So that's actually part of your hormone optimization. So your, you know, your thyroid needs to be on, your insulin sensitivity needs to be on, your, you know, your estradiol needs to be at the right levels, your testosterone needs to be at the right levels, your DHT needs to be at the right levels, sex hormone binding globulin needs to be at the right levels, your free versus total needs to be at the right levels, your DHEA needs to be at the right levels, your pregnenolone needs to be at the right levels. So you need, like, you need that full pathway, because it, you know, the downside of doing testosterone replacement therapy and just, you know, taking testosterone from a bottle and putting it into your body is that your body quits making what it doesn't need.
Yeah.
And what most people do is they shut down their production and they start feeling a little worse, and they up their dose, and they start and they feel good, and then start feeling worse, and they up their dose again, and then they get on these really high levels, and they're essentially making no testosterone. So there's no intermediate between cholesterol and testosterone, and there's no use of their cholesterol. So then their cholesterol goes up and all their intermediates are gone, and there's a lot of biological active mediators in there, intermediates in there. And then that high dose of testosterone, those big boluses of testosterone, then decrease the androgen receptors. And now when you decrease androgen receptors, well, you're not even getting the use out of the testosterone anymore, right? You know, the short answer is you have to find somebody who knows what the hell they're doing to modulate all this. The ideal of anything, in my professional opinion, the ideal of anything is to try to mimic, you know, physiologic norm. Like, how did you evolve? How does your body normally work? Well, when do you make testosterone? First 4 hours of your sleep. When should you take testosterone? First 4 hours of your sleep, right?
That makes sense.
Like, get that bolus when you should ordinarily get that bolus. If you're going to take Clomid, or if you're going to take Enclomiphen, and you're going to spike your LH and FSH and increase your own testosterone production, when do you take that? Well, right before you go to bed, so that you're doing that at night. And then when you wake up in the morning, LH and FSH are kind of dropping back down, and like all of that in Clomiphen.
I was kind of under the idea that you take everything in the morning, because then at night you would let your own natural production.
This episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market. We've built an online training business by partnering with Train Heroic to deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jack Street, Hammer, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training. And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best training tech in the business, head to trainheroic.com/powerathletehq. And now back to the show.
Kind of It'd work. Be nice if that worked, but I don't think it does.
You don't think, okay. Well, that's kind of the way that I always looked at it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like with
that was the argument
with growth hormone, same thing. People take GH in the morning.
Right.
And then that way, you know, you let your GH production.
Yeah.
Unless they've cooked their system, and then now you're replacing it.
And I've tested that theory out. And basically, you know, of course, growth hormone is a good example as any. Use growth hormone, of course, as, you know, converting into IGF-1, that IGF-1 is then the hypothalamus response to whether or not you need more growth hormone. Well, if you took, you know, 3 units of growth hormone, your IGF-1 is like 300 or something, and you're 45 years old, and your brain reads that, and it's like, doesn't need to make any growth hormone. It's not going to make any growth hormone because your IGF-1 is where it should be, right? So now you've just gotten a growth hormone spike in the morning instead of at night when you'd ordinarily get it. But you're going to end up with the same overall level. I've tested that with dozens of clients. Take it at night, take it in the morning, we'll see if there's any difference. I've never seen a difference.
Gotcha.
Yeah, with the secretagogues or actually taking growth hormone. Mm. So, I take that back. Secretagogues do work better at night. Mm. If you take the secretagogue in the morning, you won't end up with as high of a total IGF-1.
Oh, well, also taking my Enclomiphen and my DHEA and the progesterone and all that at night.
Yeah.
Well, that's a better one.
Pregnenolone.
Yeah, pregnenolone. What did I say?
Progesterone.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, pregnenolone.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So actually, the testing, and then how often should people get tested?
Once you dial in your program.
Every 6 months?
Yeah, twice a year would be good. I mean, I've been doing it since I was 48, so that's whatever. 6 years, and I do labs probably closer to once a year now. Because nothing changes for me. It's like my labs changed by less than 10% on anything.
It's like going to the dentist for me.
Yeah.
Like whether I go every 6 months or every year, it's the same amount of cleaning, yeah. The same amount, everything looks the same.
Yeah.
So I just went and got my teeth cleaned. I saw the lady 6 months and she's like, I don't know if there's a difference between 6 months and a year. I'm like, well, it's because I brush my teeth.
Yeah.
And I floss and I don't eat a ton of sugar. So like,
and you don't have a lot of stress probably.
Yeah.
You don't have a lot of stress hormones because that's where most of that tartar buildup in the bottom, that happens from increased blood glucose, causes a release of some enzymes in your mouth or whatever that causes that tartar buildup in there. So the more stress hormones you have, the faster you build up tartar.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's another interesting tell.
When I was in medical school, I didn't get my teeth cleaned like every 3 months. And they're like flicking off little rocks.
Well, I take it as kind of like an insult if like they go through and, you know, they kind of go through and they clean and they kind of go, you know, like it's impossible. Like my goal for a long time was when I went to to get my teeth cleaned that she had to do no work. And she's like, you look perfect.
Yeah.
High five me out the door. But it's never been that case.
Yeah.
So then I figure like, all right, like, you know, like there's got to be some regular flossing and picking and like all the other stuff.
Right.
But like I didn't really notice a difference between doing it like 3 times a week and like 7 days a week.
Yeah.
So it's really like I don't floss my teeth every single day or, you know, but then they're like floss after every meal. So maybe it's like once a day or maybe every other day if, you know.
Yeah. I try to floss every night, but I probably average 5 nights a week, four or five, something in that ballpark. Yeah. I was very, very, very consistent for a good 5 years. I felt like my gums were receding from flossing too much. So, I started going, I'm going to like do it every other day. And then that wasn't quite enough. So I kind of,
It's really like, for me every day and maybe like occasionally it's like skip a day, but at least, you know, and then I use a water pick and then, you know, obviously a Sonicare, but, you know, I like when COVID hit, I didn't get my teeth cleaned for like 2 years.
Same with me.
Right. And
same,
then when I went in, and then what's wild is when I went in, there was no difference.
Oh, wow.
The lady's like, you know, because I've gone to the same lady since we've been here.
Yeah.
And she's like, there was really no difference.
The Marble Falls lady?
No, I go to Dr. Eckerd. So,
Yeah.
So I go to Dr. Eckerd. He's fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, he's good.
Kate takes a lady go to the people out in Marble Falls, and they do that whole, you know, like analyze and
dark field microscopy.
Yeah,
spirochetes and stuff. Yeah,
yeah. I go see Dr. Eckerd because one, he makes my mouthpieces. Two, he's my friend.
Yeah,
and I have a great time when I see him to bullshit.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And I love that dude.
I got that now, that nighttime one and the workout one.
Isn't it? So. For anybody that's listening, if you guys Google the podcast, Dr. Greg Eckerd, he's a dentist here in Austin.
Yeah.
He makes the single greatest mouthpieces. He calls them a sleep appliance.
Yeah.
That sleep appliance is like an off switch for me. The minute I snap it in, I put my head down, I fall asleep to the point where on my Sleep 8 profile, they actually dock me for how fast I fall asleep. Mm. It gives me a red because you're supposed to spend like 10 to 20 minutes in bed, like relaxing.
Right.
I fall asleep in under 3 minutes and it gives me a red score every day.
Yeah, that's a sign of chronic sleep deprivation if you fall asleep that fast.
Like that my entire life.
The only thing I'll say about it could just be something I need to learn or maybe adjust it out more is that it's enough bulk to keep my lips apart, so I mouth breathe, and it dries my tongue out like crazy.
So he has to adjust it. Mm. So there's some adjustments in the
back? Yeah, he gave me the tool to adjust it, so I probably do just need to keep pulling it forward, I think.
Yeah, bottom
jaw forward.
Yeah, go see him. So I always bring him with me, and they'll clean him. They put him in their like supersonic thing.
Yeah.
But also he goes and he adjusts it and like fine-tunes it, so it's not like he did it once. You have to go back a few times.
Yeah.
But that thing is an absolute game changer. And because I'm a total psychopath, on occasion, I won't wear it just to remind myself how much I enjoy wearing it.
Yeah.
So like once a week, I just will sleep without it. I'll be like, I'm not going to wear it tonight. And then I wake up and I'm like, God damn it. I can't believe I didn't wear it. And I almost do it as like a test. I told him that and he's like, you're a psychopath.
I travel and I'm afraid to take it.
Because if you lose it or you leave it in a hotel.
I was like, dude, what if I leave it in the hotel?
You know, how expensive these fucking things are?
Like, and it takes like a couple of months to get one. It's like, I don't want to. So I'll travel for a week and I'll be like, man, I'm really looking forward to that again.
Dude, it's like,
and I don't have sleep apnea, you know, I do snore a little bit if I lay on my back. Mm-hmm. And Brandy says I don't snore if I have that.
When
I'm wearing that.
When, in the sleep eight. I think I snore like less than 8 minutes a night. Mm. It's like 6 to 8 minutes. It somehow tells me I snore.
Yeah.
I don't know when I snore or where it necessarily is, but I'm on average like 6 to 8 minutes is kind of the, like it's always sub 10.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's like 2 minutes, sometimes it's six. I don't know. Maybe it's like I wake up and take deep breaths or I don't know how it or put it, but I know that if I wear it, Kate never tells me I snore, but if I don't wear it, she'll be like, you had some weird breathing patterns.
Yeah.
But I also think moms sleep so light, you know?
Yeah.
Like, what was that?
Until you're an empty nester, I think everything relaxes on them. Oh.
It's not up to us anymore. Yeah, they can figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So is there a kind of, one of the questions that we get a lot too is like, you know, I'm relatively young, like I'm in my 30s, I'm getting my blood work done, things aren't optimal. Is there kind of a pre-stack that people can do before they go into full-blown injections?
Yeah, so you could, so I wasn't this way when I started. Well, I think I was just more aggressive when I started. There were still guys that I didn't start on testosterone right away. I think it's beneficial to obviously optimize your own production as long as you possibly can. So, I mean, you can start that early by getting good sleep and exercising regularly and eating plenty of protein and doing some HIIT and all that type of stuff that we know will help maintain your testosterone levels, staying lean, and then you start getting into supplementations, the precursors to testosterone. You can DHEA, 7-keto DHEA. Pregnenolone gives you a dedicated cortisol pathway so that you don't get a steal from your testosterone production. You can inhibit aromatase mildly with zinc citrate, with about 60 milligrams a day of zinc citrate decreases aromatase activity by about 20-30%. When estradiol starts going up, because you have a lot of conversion, and so for anyone in your audience who doesn't know, like, men have the aromatase enzyme same way women make estrogen. Men and women make estrogen and testosterone in the same way. Their ovaries actually make testosterone that gets converted into estrogen before it leaves the ovary. But our testicles make testosterone, and our aromatase enzyme is in our subcutaneous fat, not omental fat, not brown fat. So just the fat you don't want to see in the mirror.
Yeah, the jiggly fat.
Yeah, the jiggly fat. So that fat has aromatase enzyme in it that converts testosterone to estrogen. Estrogen then increases sex hormone binding globulin. Sex hormone binding globulin binds testosterone and estrogen irreversibly and makes those hormones useless. But the hypothalamus also balances your testosterone through your estradiol levels. So the fatter you are, the more of your testosterone will be converted to estrogen. The higher your estrogen gets, the more testosterone your hypothalamus thinks you have, the lower your luteinizing hormone goes, the less testosterone
like a vicious cycle.
The fatter you get, and it just keeps getting worse and worse. So, you need to make sure that your estrogen levels are staying optimal, because again, as that estrogen increases,
but you do need estrogen.
You do need estrogen.
Yeah.
But if you go back to Framingham data, it's like 10 to 20 nanograms per deciliter is what people had in this 50s and 60s. Now they're like, oh, it's up to 50 is normal. It's like, it's not normal, right? Testosterone numbers are coming down. Estrogen numbers are going up. Sex hormone binding globulins are going up in their lab sets, because every 10,000 labs, they readjust their reference numbers. Mm-hmm. And so as America gets less and less healthy, they're chasing those markers. And it's a treatment schemata, I think, because there's only so much healthcare practice that's available, and they don't want to break their communist government medical system they're trying to build. I'd say maybe a maximum of 25 if you can feel it, but 10 to 15 seems to be fine for people. If you feel like your joints start aching, then that's the only time I'll ever think, well, maybe he needs a little more estrogen and let him get a little higher. The estrogen sensitivity in men is enormous. Like, the range of that is enormous, right? So some guys, they hit an estradiol of 50 and they'll get gynecomastia.
Sure.
Some guys will come in with a 250 and have no idea that their estrogen's even high and have no symptoms whatsoever.
If somebody has gynecomastia, and they always have this question, and I've never seen it really ever definitively answered. If you have gynecomastia and they do the surgery, can the gynecomastia ever come back? Or do they kind of remove?
It can come back depending on how much they remove. So in utero, when we're forming, you know, the first 12 weeks of embryology is identical, right? So males and females kind of develop identically, and maybe I'm off on that, but it's somewhere around 8 to 12 weeks before the hormonal differences really shift. So we're actually born with some breast tissue in men. We don't have as much as women. So even if you started pumping, you know, a 13-year-old boy full of estrogen, he's not going to grow female-sized breasts. He's just going to get gynecomastia, right? Yeah. So we don't have as much breast tissue. But when they do that surgery for gynecomastia, they're actually going in there and scraping out the breast tissue. So if they scrape out all of the breast tissue, and by that I mean mammary tissue, right? If they scrape out all of that tissue, well, then you can't get gynecomastia again. But that's the right. Odds that they're going to get all of it, probably not realistic, but it could be significantly different. And some guys get gynecomastia with like one testosterone injection and like, bam, gynecomastia.
Yeah, I've heard stories of people looking at testosterone getting gynecomastia.
Other guys come in, 250, 300, they're like, oh no, what's an aromatase inhibitor? Should I be on that? And like, symptoms.
I've heard of guys doing like 2 and 3 grams of testosterone and not getting gynecomastia.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just kind of educating myself about this stuff, I started taking DHEA, just regular DHEA, and I wasn't doing anything to block aromatization. And next time I did my labs, my estradiol was almost 200. It was like 189, I think, or something like that. I had no idea. I didn't have gynecomastia. I didn't have any real symptoms. I couldn't really tell.
Well, if you look at my labs, my DHT is like 12 times higher than any human being, like naturally.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so my DHT is through the roof.
Okay.
And I remember Doc Inkledon was always like, it's probably a genetic.
And you still have all your hair.
Yeah, and I don't really have excess body hair.
Yeah.
My PSA numbers are like 0.001.
Yeah.
So Tom's like, whatever the, you know, like your DHT being naturally doesn't affect you in any way that we would see with somebody that artificially had high DHT. Yeah. So he also thought, he's like, you know, there's probably some genetic modifications which allowed you to be able to do your job.
Yeah.
And probably having high DHT, probably.
DHT is more anabolic than testosterone,
yeah.
But it just doesn't really have much effect on muscle. But it's like everything else, it's more anabolic with.
But it was also probably why I was able to fucking get Hulk-like anger really quickly. He's like, it's probably from just having high DHT. But he's like, you have all your hair.
Yeah.
And he's like, your prostate numbers are low and you don't have like crazy body hair. Like anybody that we see artificially high DHT, you don't have any of the factors.
There's huge variance with estradiol and DHT, how much people can tolerate, what makes them feel good or bad. I go for kind of like the Framingham norms on all that stuff, which is 60, 70 year old data. People were healthier back then. It wasn't ideal. People were still, you know, we had already been industrialized for 50 years or so.
So talking to Dr. Hazen, you know, Sabine Hazen, who does all the gut stuff, she really puts a big divide about 1980. Mm-hmm. So she's like, people before 1980 and people post 1980, that's kind of the break on this stuff. And so she's like, if you look at like everything.
High fructose corn syrup in 84.
Yeah. And she's like, and then also glycophosphate. And you get into all these things.
Right,
She's like, you know, kids born pre 1980, post 1980 was also the difference in vaccines.
Right.
Like, I think I asked my mom, I got two, or maybe we got three, which was what? I think we got polio, we got measles, and tetanus were the three I got.
Yeah. I was going to say we probably got like six in our whole lives before adulthood.
I think we got, I think I got three. And then I asked my mom, she's like, I don't think we ever went back for it anymore. But like every couple of years, you'd have to get a tetanus shot when you go to play football.
Right. Yeah.
So I think we got that, but I don't think we never got any,
I was counting tetanus booster, and I think there was some other kind of booster around teenagers, but I can't remember what it's like. 17?
Yeah, so to go to school in California, you got to have 78 vaccines. I think it's up to 81 at some point. Let me pull up that number.
That can't possibly be bad for you. What could possibly go wrong with that?
How many vaccines to go to school in California?
Comes back. Why would you go to school in California?
Let's see. It's something crazy. It's a lot. They're like, it's a lot. I mean, I remember, it's a lot. So, I mean, yeah. So like that kind of that mark of like 1980 is a kind of an interesting one.
Yeah.
Especially when you look at like, gut diversity and really just how healthy people are.
Right.
I mean, just been having exposed. I mean, when we got all of our genetic stuff done, I was able to get my dad done. I got myself and I got Cash done. And the geneticist guy that we ended up dealing with out of MIT was like, you know, people that were born, Greatest Generation, Silent Generation, even some of the early baby boomers and kind of in are dramatically genetically much more robust than what we're seeing today.
Not surprising.
So for the hormone replacement, maximizing and optimizing, it really starts with one, testing and finding somebody that is intelligent and knows how to manage this.
Yeah.
I know there's a ton of stuff online and there's all these different experts and what, but it feels that there's not that many, and my joke is always there's not that many 99 level wizards when it comes to this stuff. Fortunately, you're one of them, which is great for me.
Yeah.
But for people out there, like, how do they find somebody who's, most people that are listening are not going to have access to Doc Parsley. So you guys are getting them here. But for most people out there, is there, how do they find somebody? Like, how do they vet that process?
I wish I knew, honestly. People ask me that all the time. People call and want to be my clients. I tell them my program, like, well, that's not me. I don't know what to tell you, right?
Yeah.
I think
people ask me, I get quite a few phone calls about people that want to engage you on this stuff. And all I tell them is it's very intensive. It's not cheap, but you're going to come out the other side amazing. Like, do you have X amount of dollars to spend? And people kind of go like that. And I'm like, well, if you're pausing at that amount,
right.
Like you're not his client.
Right.
Like you're people that were like, well, that's it. You know, call my assistant. You know?
Yeah. I mean, there are guys who can do a great job for probably half of what I charge. I'm very upfront with my clients. It's like, hey, I'm charging this much because you're paying for me to treat seals for free. Right.
Yeah.
So, every client of mine is paying for me to probably treat about 10 seals. So that's why I do it that way. So I guess I would go online. I'd find people near you. I'd look into their pedigree. And then go pay for a consult and just see, just make sure that when you go in there, they don't say, well, you know, there's these three meds that we take and you get this package and it comes in the mail automatically and whatever, like that type of care, you know, just go in there and ask them some questions, like ask them, hey, what all do you measure? What all do you track? What all are you trying to control for? What are the pros and cons of doing testosterone replacement therapy versus just optimizing through supplements or pharma? And like, just pick their brains and see if they have educated opinions on them. And if they do, like, you'll probably get a decent job, you know? I can say, in the last 5 years, when I get clients who've been on hormone replacement therapy, I'd say probably 30% of them now are on decent care. It was zero before, 5 years ago, it was zero. Like, whatever they were on was trash. It was making them worse. So it's coming up. There's more and more guys who can do it. I'm training a couple of guys who, still aren't going to be cheap, but they're going to be, half of what I charge. But you need somebody who understands that. And if you just want to blindly do something, you can't go wrong. If you're taking DHEA and you don't need it, you're just going to pee it out, right? It's not going to go anywhere. If you're taking the zinc citrate and you don't need it, you're just going to pee it out. Pregnenolone the same way. There's herbs and things that people take, like the Tongali and stuff. I don't know about that stuff. Like I see mixed reviews on it. I don't put people on it, so I don't know. I haven't tested anybody. I don't have any clinical experience with it. Maybe some of those things work. The only way you know is by testing yourself. Mm-hmm. There's some evidence that ice baths can help. There's some evidence that saunas can help. Obviously, HIIT helps. getting good sleep helps. Decreasing alcohol helps. Marijuana is huge. Marijuana spikes estrogen levels a lot. A lot of negative effects on hormones. I don't think you can't avoid the environmental toxins. And then once you get,
you can manage them through sauna. I mean, that's one of the,
one of the reasons to detox with a sauna.
Well, I had a buddy recently hit me up and he's like, you know, he got all his blood work done. I always recommend anybody over approaching the age of 40 should go out and get their blood work done. And so we found him a local provider, kind of, you know, wrote him out a list of, hey, what he needs to do. And his, you know, elevated liver enzymes, he's a welder, my buddy Will. He's a fabricator. He's around, you know, shielding gas. He's around a lot of gasoline is what? I forgot what the chemical is.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. And welders also have...
High metals.
Yeah, there's one specific metal. I looked it up a while ago because a bunch of SEALs had it, and I was like, why would they? And there's like welders. I'm like, they're not welders. So it was environmental toxins from their combat zones. Burn pits.
So he had high liver enzymes, and so they wanted to like give him all this shit for a liver detox. And I'm like, well, your liver and kidneys are pretty good at detoxing themselves because that's exactly what they do.
Right.
What you have to do is you have to get this stuff out of your body. So you got to get in a sauna 5 days a week, you know, 30 minutes, 172 degrees. And when you get out immediately as you're sweating, you need to go shower and get that shit off of you.
Yeah.
So Dr. Tom did some really interesting testing where people were doing saunas. After they got out of the sauna, they sat and they dried. And the levels were no different. Like they were sweating it out and it was just reabsorbing.
Wow.
So when you get out of the sauna, you got to go shower and get that shit off.
Or you just moved to Texas, man. Sweat 24 hours a day.
Dude.
Keep changing your clothes. Shower three times a day.
Well, it's hilarious. Last year, we had over 70 days over 104.
Yeah.
And it was fucking like spiteful, egregious. Whenever people ask me about Texas, I tell them Texas is an angry place.
Texas is trying to kill you. Right. Everything's trying to kill you here.
Now, this year we've actually been pretty nice. It was in like the 90s.
Yeah.
And like I went outside and I'm like, this isn't so bad. After last year, I always think that like to call yourself at least, I don't count myself as a Texan. You're a Texan. You're from Texas. I'm just a refugee living here in Texas. But like I've absorbed.
You're a Texian.
Yeah. I'm moving towards Texan, but part of that is being able to walk outside and be like, this is hot, but this isn't Texas hot.
We just came back from Phoenix. We went down there for the Moresco kind of research presentation.
Oh, on the ice bath.
Yeah.
Can we get a discount on those?
I don't think right now. I think right now they're trying to rebuild. They had some internal kerfuffle and people got fired and, you know, they're trying to rebuild some capital right now. But I think eventually, yes.
Okay. I like their stuff that it makes it so nice.
Yeah.
They're really
did I tell you I got one?
No, no. But I've used them. Harry Shaw has one. They're fucking dope.
Yeah. Yeah. And anyway, we were out there and every time we walked out of the hotel room, we're like, Jesus Christ, it's hot out here. Like, this is like a sauna.
Yeah.
And we're from Texas, man. And like, and then, yeah, we,
but it's a dry heat.
And then we drove back from there to here. And it was like, I don't know, high 80s or something. We're like, oh, it feels so nice. I need a sweater.
We swung by and saw Inclidon because, you know, Kate, you know, obviously she's a year past breast cancer.
Yeah.
And so we went in and like, fucking ran.
Is he in Phoenix?
Yeah, he's in Scottsdale.
Okay.
So we did like an exorbitant amount of testing. So every year, like I was like, just fucking test everything.
Okay.
And so we were out there for a couple of days and it's hot.
Yeah.
And so Kate's always like, this place is so much better than Texas. I'm like, no.
I don't get that.
Yeah. They do have good restaurants.
We're opening that performance center out there.
Yeah.
With you know, Milton Indians. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I'll hear tidbits of it.
Yeah.
You know, as you're kind of getting into it. But yeah, he was filling me in a little bit about it. And anytime I ask him a question, he's always like, I don't know. You got to talk to Ian.
Yeah.
Which is always like, Milton's not the right guy for the technical aspect because,
No. He's a marketer.
Yeah.
He's a marketer. He's got the money. He's like, that's it, buddy.
Yeah.
And Ian, yeah. I'm, I'm an integral component of it, and I don't actually know exactly what's going on. A lot of the times, I have to call Ian five times and go, what are we doing again? Like, yeah. What is this? Like, tell me about this again. Like, why are we doing this? What is this?
Milton's like, a lot of these questions pop up, and I tell them that they got to call you because you know the training stuff. And I'm like, well, just tell them to call me.
Yeah.
And I was like, but Parsi knows the training shit. Yeah. And if Parsi has a question, he calls me. Yeah. It's fine. It's easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That was... two thumbs up on hormone replacement, but finding a 99 level wizard, somebody who's intelligent, somebody can manage, being diligent in your testing, making sure that you're sleeping and doing all the other boring things that we constantly harp on. But this is something that I believe anybody over the age of 40 should be getting some form of regular blood work done. And if they're less than optimal, then they need to optimize. We're not looking at hormone replacement. We're looking at hormone optimization.
All right.
Ask and answer. Hey there, Power Athlete Nation. Big shout out to all the heavy hitters who stuck around till the final whistle. If you've been soaking in the knowledge bombs and epic tales we've been dropping for free, here's your chance to be a game changer. Swing by kofi.com/powerathlete and toss a few bucks our way to keep the podcast fueled and firing on all cylinders. That's kofi.com/powerathlete. Your support makes a difference. See ya.